Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We continue our expectations series today. We're going to talk about Kyle Van Noy and Keaton Mitchell, one on the offense, one on the defense, as always. Here to do that with me is Dan Ibrahimi. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thank you for having me on.
Always a pleasure, Dan. Great insights into stuff. I think you're the one who talked about Brandon Stevens last year, if I recall, right?
That's correct. As a result of that, I kind of had extra eyes on him last season. And he was very, very prominent for the Ravens last year. Huge step in his development, to be sure. And really excited to see what the future holds for him.
Yeah, it's exciting. This is an enormous year for Brandon Stevens in terms of his generational wealth and whatnot. It's a contract year and don't want to overstate the thing to any great degree, but he's certainly in line to make many millions of dollars, and we'll see how that works out. Still, I think a chance the Ravens might sign him, but a deadline in their own mind is maybe pretty close to the beginning of the season. Am I having some sound problems? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I was doing a fingers crossed. I hope the Ravens can get him signed. Like you said, before the beginning of the season. I think that last year he showed that would be a wise investment for the Ravens. But I mean, the downside of the Ravens not getting it done before last season, especially, is that now, I mean, it's no secret that he may be getting corner one money in the open market.
Right. The earliest he could be re-signed is after 3 years, right? And after 3 years, right? He's entering year four right now, so this is the earliest he can really be re-signed. But it's a great opportunity, and hopefully he and the Ravens can find a number that makes sense. Are you of the opinion that it's either Stevens or Humphrey, or do you think that they can potentially have a path to keeping both with Wiggins and Tampa added to the fold?
I think it's probably either or, to be honest, especially after investing two picks on cornerback this past draft, combined with the fact that we haven't really seen a resurgence from Pepe or Jalen Armour Davis. I think it's probably either or for Stevens or Humphrey. I think that's a great point. And yeah, I think I know which way I would lean if I were the Ravens, but I'm really interested to see how they play that.
I've got to promise myself we're not going to talk anymore about Stevens and Humphrey in particular and his potential versatility on this episode, because it's leaked into a lot of the episodes so far, and I don't want to repeat the material to the degree you can. So let's go and talk. I guess we'll talk. It's hard to decide who's the appetizer and who's the main course on this one. So I'll let you pick. Who do you want to talk about first?
Why don't we start with Keaton Mitchell?
Sure thing. So obviously coming off the greatest year in terms of per snap productivity for any running back in 40 years of Football Outsiders collecting data, exceeded all expectations. I'll tell you what I had for great, and you're going to say, well, that really undershot the mark, I'm sure. But what are your initial thoughts coming out of that first season?
Well, it was, a really disappointing end, but I think that's only because the peak was so incredible. I mean, he averaged an absolutely insane 8.7 yards per touch between rushing and receiving, and then 8.5 yards per target, along with 19 first downs on the ground. Ken, my honest thought about Mitchell is, I really think that down the stretch with those extra four games after getting hurt in the Jacksonville game just before Christmas, I really think that he would have integrated himself further into the Ravens passing game. He was starting to do that with 9 catches for 93 yards, but I really think that the arrow was pointing up there.
Oh, I mean, anytime a running back hammers it for 9.3 yards per target, it's very unusual, just extraordinary, elusive player. And, you know, it wasn't just elusiveness. It wasn't just speed. I think he's more about speed and contact balance. I was incredibly impressed with this last year, both as a receiver and as a running back. Just the amount of missed tackles he forced, in particular in that Lions game, was incredible.
Absolutely. And if I remember correctly, Seattle was his coming out party, and yeah, that was just, I was floored, because, you know, hadn't really seen much of him in camp up to that point. So yeah, it was incredible to see his coming out party.
But by the way, that's, you're correct, that was the game where he had all the missed tackles forced. He had 150 yards or whatever and a bunch of long runs. It was a ton of broken tackles. PFF had him for 15 missed tackles forced on the year and 47 carries, which is an absurd number.
That's incredible.
There are players who get a few more than that, but the guys who get a few more than that are bruiser backs. It's both of the Pittsburgh backs. Warren, in particular, has had a fair number of those. Love the balance production. I think that, you know, you mentioned integration in the offense. I think there's an opportunity for much more of that down the line. He'd be a guy I'd be really excited about seeing. I'm always excited by the pony backfield whenever he gets on the field, but I'd be really excited to see more of him as a flanker with Henry.
Absolutely. I could not agree more, Ken. And you know, I'm the son of a Buffalo fan, so I'm naturally a bit pessimistic, especially when it comes to my football fandom. But when Mitchell went down against Jacksonville, I really had a feeling that it would spell trouble in the playoffs. And I think, unfortunately, I was proven right about that. You know, just thinking back to the ground attack or lack thereof against the Chiefs and ultimately the Ravens' final game of the season. I really think that a healthy Keaton Mitchell in that game could have definitely changed the end result in the Ravens' favor.
Yeah, it would have made it that much harder to get away from the run game if you have Keaton Mitchell. And you can kind of see it all over Harbaugh's face when it occurred. Harbaugh's he tries to be non-reactive on the field. I think that's stiff upper lip. You need to put forth the best face for your team. But he's clearly really frustrated by that injury. And when you look at the most serious rookie injuries in team history, the one that redirected a potential Hall of Fame career, I think, was Lardarius Webb in 2009. You know, he had two injuries, one in 9, another in 12. Had that incredible season in 2011 when he's the best cornerback in the league. But Mitchell, you know, this is potentially a career-altering move, and it's just incredibly sad to have this happen at the, right in the middle of what was a great rookie year.
I totally agree. It definitely does have shades of Lardarius Webb. He was really quick too and very shifty as a returner back in his rookie year. But yeah, all of the praise that you gave Mitchell earlier, both relating to his speed and agility, kind of just makes it all the more concerning that this was a full ACL tear. And it happened right before Christmas. Like, it really, I know that the NFL season is longer now, which plays to his advantage in coming back this year in a couple ways, I think. But Christmas wasn't that long ago. It's not like this happened in mid-October. That's definitely concerning for his comeback from injury this season.
So Harbaugh has already speaking to it, talk about not likely being ready for the start of training camp, and I think also the start of the regular season. So what is your expectation for how much he might get on the field this year?
So I'm going to be honest, Ken. The more that I thought about this, I think my expectations and hopes for Mitchell kind of lie more in 2025 than 2024 at this point. For this year, if he's able to come back to the team down the stretch, say that he misses exactly one calendar year, comes back right around Christmas, week 16 or so, and then he's able to be a contributor and he doesn't get hurt again, which I know Ravens fans all have some recent PTSD with J.K. Dobbins, that's a win for me if he's able to go into 2025 healthy.
I would agree with that. I think that I set very low snap limit expectations out of a good and a great season, but we'll get to those in a minute here. I could see a fairy tale rehab story where he comes back and is available maybe as early as November, say, and is playing. I really think the Ravens should take no chances with this. I can't believe that the difference in play between Mitchell and other choices is going to be enough, given if he's a 70 or 80% Mitchell relative to others. If he's, he could be better than Derrick Henry, honestly, if he was 2023 Mitchell again. But and he was better than Derrick Henry on a per snap basis last year. But it's just a devastating injury. It's a kind of thing. But the fairy tale situation, obviously, gets back via rehab and then is back at some point for the playoffs and maybe makes a contribution there. That would be really spectacular if there could be something in that case. But we did see J.K. Dobbins, and he came back and was running with a piano on his back the whole year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're depressed enough about what happened. Let's talk about what a good and a great season is. Just get it out there. How about a good season for Keaton Mitchell? What does it look like to you?
So I think a good season is he comes back and he sort of shows shades of his 2023 self, but maybe doesn't quite get all the way back. Maybe he is a little bit later in returning than we had initially hoped. But like I said, I mean, a huge thing for me is going to be finishing the season healthy. So that would also be a requirement for a good season for him. Oh, Ken, I think you're on mute.
It wouldn't be a show if that didn't happen. Okay, I'll just read you mine. Rehab remains on track without setback. That's important. Or need for a cleanup procedure. Now, that's it frequently happens with knee injuries and whatnot, so hopefully there isn't one of those. He takes one or two spots have been added by the league rule for players to start the season injured, return to IR. No roster gymnastics are necessary for your first two guys this year. There will be more than that probably because the Ravens always use the fullest extent of the law look at their roster construction, and I'm sure they'll have still a handshake crew that extends their roster beyond 55. But returns on by IRDTR, I would like him to play a minimum of 50 snaps in 24. That's not 50 carries. I'll take about 20 carries on that, and that is about what his percentage of touches was last year. About 40% of the times he's on the field out of 135 carries, he had, what, about 57 touches or so. So similar as a percentage there. But perhaps without being 100%, I put absolutely zero expectation on any statistical component of his 2024 season. What I will say is that there's an expectation in terms of a little bit of flash, and you kind of talked about that, some speed, some contact balance. We see something that tells us it's going to be okay in 2025 out of the 2024 season. All right. You want to move on to what a great season is?
Absolutely. I mean, I think a great season is him picking up pretty close to where he left off. I don't think it was really specifically with carrying the ball. I don't think that was going to be sustainable for much longer, just because it's, I mean, I don't know that that's ever really been done before, especially at the start of a running back's career. But picking up fairly close to where he left off in the rushing game, and then also in the passing game, I think that he was kind of moving along at a really good clip. So if he could pick that up and just kind of be a reliable target in both the rushing and receiving games for the Ravens down the stretch and into the playoffs, I think that would be huge.
Okay. Very reasonable assumption right off the bat. Very reasonable expectation, I should say. It's interesting. The other guy who's the other greatest runner ever from 2023 is Devon Achane. And he did it basically under the same circumstances. Rookie, tremendous speed, outstanding results in terms of his run. And his per carry and per touch results were not as good as Mitchell's were, but he did it over more snaps. So he's the best ever in 100-plus carries. And so it's really an unbelievable pair. I think actually these two have set a new trend, a new emphasis on speed in the draft on offense. So there's always been an emphasis kind of on a defense. That's why you always see the really lower, the better 40 times are typically at corner as opposed to wide receiver or running back. But tremendous emphasis on it now, I believe, given the success of the Dolphins and Ravens offense.
Absolutely.
All right. So I'm going to read you what I had as a great season for 23, because this is supposed to be an 80th percentile result. And I think we can say Mitchell's result might have been in the 98th or 99th percentile in terms of what you could result. I don't know what you could have expected more. Let's put it that way. Probably 100th or pretty damn close. But the great season in 2023 was makes the team out of camp due to injury or holdout. He made the team. He was on the roster to start the season on IR and came back. Monken finds a role for him in the offense, which minimizes pass blocking deficiencies. He becomes an exciting player in the mold of Joe Washington or Dave Meggett that contributes both as a runner and receiver, 100 plus snaps. Pretty much nailed that so far ahead of that actually makes a great season look kind of foolish, but unbelievable UDFA pickup.
For sure. And just kind of building on that a little bit, Ken, It really does kind of highlight that the final round and UDFA class of the Ravens 2023 draft could potentially be the best in team history, considering how they moved up to grab Voorhees. You know, obviously we're waiting to see what he does this year in camp and beyond, but a potential starter at guard and then Keaton Mitchell. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. You know, they've had some great UDFAs over the years with, you know, Michael Pierce and Patrick Ricard and players like that who had a long-term impact. You know, Pro Bowlers are on the verge, and he's going to be one of the great ones if he can come back from this injury. And I also, you know, Voorhees, I guess you'd say the same thing. He could potentially be a great one if he can come back from the injury, but he will get the opportunity. He's in as good a developmental spot as you can have. And he's coming into that position with grown man strength and 4 years of team control remaining. So it's a very exciting prospect for Voorhees. I certainly hope he doesn't find a way to lose the starting job or get hurt in some way that causes him to lose the starting job in the preseason. That would just be incredibly disappointing at this point.
Agreed. I mean, I think it would probably mean that Ben Cleveland took a massive step forward, and you know, we've been waiting for several years for that to happen, and it hasn't yet. So
there's room for both of them to play. I mean, I think part of the stall on giving Cleveland a job, and they played him a little bit over the years, is that they had Zeitler at right guard, and they really thought that he was a guy who would come in and replace Zeitler. Normally, those contracts for the offensive linemen in their 30s don't get played out. Zeitler was a rare one where not only did he get played out, the Ravens, you know, considered extending him and whatnot, but they've finally given the job to Cleveland. So I think Cleveland has got it. I think it makes too much sense in regard to his size next to Linderbaum really being a good complement for each other. You know, you got some quickness, you got some ability to get to level two. You got a guy who could certifiably finish a block in the run game if you tee it up for him properly. And I think you get the right combination of movement and displacement that you want from those two positions. All right, I'll talk about a great season for Keaton Mitchell because we're getting hung up in the middle of this. I apologize. I'd say he returns at midseason, ramps up over 100 to 250 snaps and 50 to 75 carries. That's very aggressive, I know. Is a useful change of pace to Henry for 2024 and contributes to the Ravens' stretch drive with both spelling Henry and pony snaps. Most of what he was as a rookie is again on display just for a limited number of snaps. Path to 2025 full return suffers no setbacks.
That'd be great. Yeah, that's definitely a great season if that can happen.
Yeah. I think everybody sign up for that right now. To me, it's probably more than an 80th percentile after we've, you know, been chewing it back and forth, but I'll stick with it. I don't think it's too important to hit exactly on that percentile. It's notional in nature anyway. Let's move on and talk a little bit about Kyle Van Noy. Very pleasant free agency surprise, something the Ravens had a lot of in 2023.
For sure. I believe he signed with the Ravens after week two or three, and then after week three, yeah. And then, so he played 14 games. Van Noy, one thing that sometimes people forget, I think, is how good he's been at staying healthy in his career. Mm-hmm. He's played at least 13 games in every year since his rookie season back in 2014. So I think that definitely factored into the Ravens' risk profile when it came to signing a 33-year-old pass rusher to a 2-year deal.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. It's very late to be signing a guy for a 2-year deal, but the contract, I think it's balanced in terms of risk. Essentially, they're signing him the 2024 season. He's going to get paid $5.25 million for playing that. That's a combination of his signing bonus plus his salary for this year. Then the Ravens have a team option for a second year at $3.75 million, which it's still, to my way of thinking, at the high end of the bargain bin of edge rushers. Now, you can get a lot of guys at this age. There are a lot of guys available who've been decent edge rushers in the past, and the Ravens have proven very good at selecting ones who have really had some juice left to provide something. But I think in Van Noy's case, there could be a risk that he would retire before the second year and that the Ravens don't realize that the value of his $3.75 million. But on the other hand, it could be a case where he can threaten to retire, but he doesn't have a lot of leg to stand on, because if he played well in 2024, he should want to continue in 25. And I think the Ravens would want him to as well. And it's even possible the Ravens won't want him at all. In 2000, it's a team option, and you know, if he has a tough year or suddenly gets old on us, then it could be a contract the Ravens want to terminate at that point.
Absolutely, really interesting to kind of see how the financial aspect of that plays out. I think that was probably a pretty big hang up in salary negotiations between Van Noy, his agent, and the Ravens front office, was getting that second year on the deal. And you know, good for him. He got it. I don't think he was in the mood to be giving any discounts after last year. He had what was on paper pretty clearly a career year. He eclipsed his previous career high in sacks by 2.5, getting 9 while playing in only 14 games and also adding 4 passes defended. So, I think that he definitely earned this payday. Doesn't mean that as a fan, I'm not a little bit skeptical, just, you know, worrying about maintaining something close to that level of production and being able to stay healthy.
Right. I mean, health for a player his age, always a significant concern. The pass rush win rate, 14.7%, was 22nd out of 58 edges. To me, boy, would that be fantastic if he could maintain that. Because I don't think of Kyle Van Noy certainly as a great pass rusher. I think of him as that somewhat changed in 23, but I think of him more as a very versatile Sam linebacker who can help you by dropping. That was actually a surprise.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door. Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Men, if you've lost your hair, it doesn't mean you can't find it again. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who found their hair again. It can be hard for men to deal with hair loss, even though it is common. Luckily, I'm here to provide you with a solution so you don't even have to talk about it. Through Hims, you can restore your hair by accessing their personalized hair loss solutions. Men value many different things about their appearance. But if you're a guy who really cares about your hair and find that it's slowly going away, you might be feeling discouraged when you look in the mirror. And that's where Hims comes in. Check out their personalized hair loss solutions, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
He did surprisingly little last year. Where do I have his coverage snaps in here? I know I had that here. Yeah, career low. Only 9.4% of pass plays did he drop to coverage. So while I had some passes defensed, I thought some of that, he's obviously batting balls at the line of scrimmage, which is nice. Good anticipation there. He also had at least one, he might have had more than one, on screen plays where the ball was going outside and he knocked it down. I really like to see that. Crafty veteran player. And in terms of skills, he's still got a great spin move.
Absolutely. I mean, last year he really showed that he has a lot left in the tank. You know, I know that before last year, and I think it was he was with the Chargers for a year, and then I think he was back with New England in 21 and maybe Detroit in 22. And you know, none of that, especially in 22, really seemed to be going that well. And he really showed that you know, he had a lot left to give. I think that resurgence last year, especially for maybe Patriots fans who had followed his career extremely closely, was a pleasant surprise.
Right. Interesting situation, because his birthday, there are conflicting reports on what it is. There's a year difference in this, and that has come up for various players. And Oriole fans will remember Miguel Tejada suddenly admitting he's 2 years older than he said when he came to the team and how frustrating that was. There've been a lot of players, by the way, from the Dominican Republic that's been the case for. The scouts down there understood the game of trying to sell their players as younger than what they were. And they've now got actually very strict controls on that. I don't know how you get a year difference from Van Noy, and it's probably just a PFF error that they have him as born in 1990 as opposed to 1991. And I believe, because I've seen it from multiple sources, the 91 is probably correct.
That was what I was going off of. I had no idea that there was a discrepancy there. Yeah, definitely flashbacks to Miguel Tejada on that one.
The other guy, you want to go back a few years. I remember in a Stratomatic baseball league I was in, Junior Felix was available for draft. And Junior Felix was supposed to be 19 or 20 when he came up. And, you know, I actually sat next to some Dominicans for a game and they said, no, my uncle played with Junior Felix. He's like 24 or something. And the scale on which people were willing to be dishonest about their age was so great at that time. It's actually kind of funny, but anyway, it was what it was. Junior Felix didn't have much of a career, but you can look him up if you want to on baseballreference.com. I guess one of the questions about Van Noy, though, getting back to him, is he certainly benefited from playing inside a great outside linebacker rotation with the other two, you know, Owe and Clowney being genuine high pressure generators, and also with a great set of interior pass rushers. Is it reasonable to expect Van Noy, with the combination of age and the guys maybe around him not being quite as good with the departure of Clowney, or potentially the play on the interior not being as high, I mean, that's a risk as well, to repeat many of his statistical benchmarks from 23?
Well, Ken, I know that you've said this quite a few times, but last season was pretty much a perfect scenario for the Ravens defensive front, specifically the interior defensive line, just as far as staying healthy and overall performance. And I don't know that anybody really benefited more from that than Kyle Van Noy, except for obviously Jadeveon Clowney, who used it to cash in with Carolina. I think that there is definitely kind of some concern there. Van Noy definitely seemed to benefit a lot from the performances around him, like you just mentioned. So, I think that maintaining close to that as far as the defensive line and outside linebackers go is going to be crucial. I think that the Ravens, I think it would be interesting to know how the negotiations went with Clowney, but I think the fact that they let him go, I know he's 2 years younger than Van Noy. He hasn't been able to stay nearly as healthy, but I think that they're really hoping that that Ojabo can come up in his place and kind of maintain some of that production, because it seemed to kind of be the engine of the defense in a lot of ways.
I certainly hope there's something in store for Ojabo in terms of both floor and ceiling. My expectations are much lower than they were a year ago, and lower still than they were 2 years ago in terms of what he might bring to the table. But he's still a high pedigree player, I'll call it, who produced at the college level and was an exciting guy. I'm really concerned about what they might get. I think if I had to guess, well, if you had to guess between Adisa Isaac and Ojabo, who's going to produce more in 2024, who would you say?
Oh man, I hope it's Ojabo. That's hope, though. I think as far as what I actually think, I'd probably still go Ojabo. I think that Isaac might get kind of eased into things, and maybe a little bit similar to how Trenton Simpson did last year at the inside linebacker position. But yeah, that's a really good question. I have a feeling those two are really going to be battling it out during camp and throughout the season for snaps.
Okay, first of all, with regard to your I hope so, and I don't want to beat you up over this or anything, but absolutely, I hope it's Isaac. Isaac is a rookie, so you know you've got 3 years left of him. So from that, and I can see you're going to like, but you're right in terms of Ojabo, boy, it would really be sad if he can't beat out Adisa Isaac, say, for playing time this year. And in terms of his own personal journey, that would certainly be the case. As a Ravens fan, I'll take Isaac all day and twice on Sunday in terms of making an immediate benefit.
For the future, for sure. I was one of those guys who was really, really excited when we drafted Ojabo. And, I think last year, I think he had a sack in the opening game, and then that was pretty much it for the whole year. So I guess still holding out hope. I don't know if it's false hope at this point that he can, start really kind of, playing well, or really just playing at all, I guess, as a pass rusher on this defense.
Okay, let's go back to Van Noy. We get off tack a lot on this show, but that's okay. How about the impact of Chuck Smith? Now, you have the entire defense obviously having a great year. McDonald got a lot of the credit, and I think he deserves it in terms of setting up a lot of the coverage on the back end to allow the pass rush additional time to get pressures, to get second chance opportunities on sacks that they really delivered on. But how do you see Chuck Smith's role in all this?
I think it's absolutely crucial for both Van Noy kind of maintaining this production, towards what we can probably safely assume is the twilight of his career, as well as developing the young guys and really just kind of continuing at that clip. If I'm not mistaken, Chuck Smith, before he joined the Ravens staff, had worked in private coaching with Justin Houston. And I think that the clip Houston was moving at when the Ravens had him for those 2 years before this past one, I think that was that something like that would be ideal for Van Noy.
Yeah. All right. There's two things I really liked about the presence of Chuck Smith. The first is that he gets to work with some of the young guys, Ojabo and Isaac in particular, but Tavius Robinson, maybe let's get him a little involved in the pass rush give him better chances for Sunday activations, which are not a sure thing for a couple of guys near the bottom of the OLB group. There really wasn't room for another body in that OLB group, given the fact they really have six guys now, and he probably at least dressed five on game day. And, to be honest about it, the Ravens don't really rush. They don't use the rush nickel very much anymore, or the race car, because they have such quality interior pass rushers they want to keep on the field. So it means that they really don't have room for a whole stable of specialist outside linebackers on your 53, on your 48 man roster.
Absolutely.
But the second thing about Chuck Smith that I really loved was the fact that Harbaugh mentioned that he was looking at the individual pass rushers as part of the draft process. It's great to have scouts. You want those. In some ways, I want a separation between my football coaches and my football operations and front office group in terms of responsibilities. I think it's healthy to each have separate opinions and ways of gathering information. But absolutely love the fact that Chuck Smith is giving his opinions on various pass rushers.
For sure. I mean, his importance cannot be overstated. Just really seeing the effect that he had last year. We've been waiting for a year like that from Ravens outside linebackers rushing the passer for quite some time. And then, last year it obviously just arrived very quickly, but it was great.
Now, you're the Baltimore Ravens, and I think you're Steve Bisciotti in this scenario I'm going to paint here. But is this an opportunity to allow Harbaugh, give him some extra dollars, tell him what you want in terms of leveraging the position of the franchise right now, which is obviously at a consistently one of the best franchises in the NFL, whatever you want to say about Lamar Jackson's playoff performance. And I know you're not one of those, but there's a whole lot of people out there who are whiners. But the Ravens have consistently been one of the best franchises. They've also been one of the places where the coaches are hired and then they move elsewhere. You look at the whole set of defensive coordinators who moved on to head coaching roles, the whole other more junior people who moved on to defensive coordinator roles. Is this a point where Harbaugh and Bisciotti should be sitting down and saying, look, John, you've done a wonderful job on hiring assistant coaches. I'm giving you extra money this year, but I want you to approach it from a standpoint of go out to these guys and sell them on the opportunity before you have to lay into the money component of it and see if you can build a superstar squad across. And if we lose six of them next year, no big deal. We'll replace them again.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. I don't have as much money as Steve Bisciotti, so I don't know that I have the standing to say that. But yeah, especially after last year, specifically on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, in my opinion, that was a total all-star coaching staff, and I think Harbaugh has absolutely earned the right to go out and try to rebuild that again. And I think giving him some extra money to do so would be a fantastic idea. I have to imagine that the Ravens are a premier destination across the league for defensive assistants after last year. There were, you know, obviously the one big promotion with McDonald, but then, you know, also a lot of lateral movement too, specifically with Anthony Weaver going to, was it Jacksonville or Miami and kind of bringing some guys along with him. So yeah, I think selling the opportunity before getting into dollars would be good. But then I think, you know, when it comes to giving out more dollars in those contracts of defensive assistants, I think Harbaugh has absolutely earned that right.
Okay. All right. I think, well, let's get back to Van Noy and what would constitute for you a good season for him.
So I would say a good season, probably that he again plays about 14 games. That would be if he's on the team for the whole year. I think that would be right around where we're expecting him, where that baseline would be. I think the pass rush win rate that you had mentioned earlier, I think that probably drops a little bit along with total sacks. And then I would also need to see a little bit more out of him in the playoffs. He didn't really have the best game against Houston. He didn't really have a good game against the Chiefs either. I think he had one big stop on Pacheco on a third and long, and then obviously he had the unnecessary roughness penalty that helped the Chiefs get into field goal range to close down the first half and score what turned out to be their final points of the game. So postseason performance would be, it either way is going to be a pretty big judgment factor for me for Van Noy this year.
Some really good points there. I appreciate that. And I think you're right about the drop in productivity. I'll just read you mine. Active for 13 plus games and loses minimally to Father Time, but production falls back to the pre-2023 level with approximately five sacks. And more importantly, this is much more important, that he has that good pyramid of supporting pressures. There are some players on the Ravens who benefited from the fact that pressure was coming from everywhere last year and had great sack totals. And Matt Abike is really the best example, but Van Noy also, without really having as big a pyramid of pressures as you would normally have. So some pressures, some quarterback hits. I think Van Noy might only had two quarterback hits last year that weren't sacks. So that's a little unusual to be that low. I expect him to cede more of the run defense role to other outside linebackers this year. So I'd expect his projected snaps. So this would be, if he played all 17 games, he'd be around 550 snaps, or he'll play about 32 per regular season game where he's active. And most important thing for just a good season for him, not a great season, is that the Ravens' overall pass rush takes only a minimal step backward post-Clowney. Now, that depends on all 11 defenders. It doesn't just depend on Clowney or the outside linebackers or even all the guys who are rushing the passer. It depends on the secondary, you know, holding up their end of the bargain. It depends on scheme holding up and being confusing to opposing offensive coordinators. So it's a big ask, and it's kind of a little unfair put to put in Kyle Van Noy's category. But if the other things fall into place and the pass rush doesn't fall off too much, and, you know, maybe I'm talking about high 40s in terms of sacks for this year for the Ravens instead of 60 last year, 60 or 61, whichever they had, you know, a drop to into 48 range or something would be okay. I don't want to see him drop off to 35.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Maintaining the overall level of team production is huge. And yeah, we had a couple lean years in terms of overall team sacks, and really hoping to not get back down to that 30, 35, 40 range.
All right. Talk about what a great season looks like for Van Noy.
I, I think a great season means that he kind of continues trending upward. I'm not totally expecting that to happen, but with 9 sacks last year, I would say eclipsing that and getting to double digits would be pretty significant. And then continuing, continuing to kind of serve on a little bit of cleanup crew. I know you just mentioned that he was not getting many hits at all when he wasn't sacking the quarterback. I think that also indicates that he was doing a good job of wrapping up and finishing the job. So I wouldn't expect that to change very much. But yeah, I would say increasing his sack output, maybe dropping back into coverage a little bit more. He was rarely asked to do that last year. So I would say that I'm not necessarily expecting that to change, but he has had success with it elsewhere earlier in his career. So I would say doing all of that and then, you know, kind of reliving his glory days from New England as far as the postseason goes. Key cog on two Super Bowl winning defenses in 2016 and 2018. And I think just kind of bringing that back, which certainly did not happen here last year.
Great point in particular about the coverage thing, because that's really a way for him to pick up some sacks on the margin. And I didn't include it in mine. Now I'm jealous of yours, but a great season for me continues to surprise with another fine season at 33 by maintaining conditioning and focus on the small improvements needed to just stay even, needed to just keep up. The pressure pyramid is larger than with good, but I still think that pressure pyramid meets. By the way, want to talk about the pressure pyramid? Let me just take a second to talk about this, because I think I get the sense you completely understand it, Dan, but I want to see a large number of pressures that are not quarterback hits, then a good number of quarterback hits that are not sacks, then a relatively a number of sacks that makes sense given those quarterback hits and pressures. A really thin, you know, vertical kind of a pyramid is generally not sustainable. So you need to have more pressures in order to hopefully generate some of those sacks that come as the fruits of those. But that's what I'm talking about when I talk about the pyramid. So in this case, I'm talking his pressure pyramid is larger. I still think he comes down from 9 sacks, even in a great year where I'd tag it at the 80th percentile. I think, you know, if he could get 7 sacks, I think that could easily be a great year with a good pressure pyramid that's helping a lot of people. Your comment about dropping to coverage is great, because he can create opportunities for other players by providing pass rush flexibility, or grew up in a system that had a fair amount of that and has been a DC, an assistant coach in that situation for several years. So hopefully he's a player who sees the value of dropping the outside linebacker and what players like Tyus Bowser could do for the Ravens when they were healthy. I think that run defense from Van Noy, I want to say it's good enough that they don't have to take him off the field on early down. So in the good level, I'm having him cede a lot of that run responsibility. In the great level, I'm saying he can play more projected snaps and maybe 650 to 700, which would be an increase to about 40 per game over 17 games. And the last thing about this is, whatever he does in this year, if he has a great season, there's no remaining question about the value of his 2025 contract.
Absolutely. Bringing him back for 2025 would absolutely be part of a great season. I totally agree.
All right. Outstanding stuff. Dan, always a pleasure talking football with you. Tough folks. I mean, I know you don't do a podcast, but you have terrific knowledge. Every series I have, I include you in, and sometimes more than once. And I know you like to do a lot of the historical pods and whatnot. But tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Absolutely. Really appreciate the kind words, Ken. I love coming on your show. It's by far my favorite Ravens podcast. No disrespect to anybody else. But I'm on Twitter at Dre, that's D-R-E 8820. If anyone has any segments they want to discuss, feel free to reach out.
All right. Outstanding. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, just hit me up. The expectation series is now fully subscribed, but the recollection series, still got time for those until training camp begins, and love to hear from you about a player you'd like to talk about. By now, you will have seen that James Hurst, Recollections of James Hurst, has already come out, and there'll be Recollections of Kyle Bowler coming soon. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a player where all the memories are positive, just a player that you have some memories of and you'd like to talk about. And, you know, James Hurst in a lot of ways is a misunderstood player, a player who became better over the course of his career and really had a very fine run with the Saints after he left with the Ravens. But it's an interesting discussion having that with Miggy Duran, and I appreciate him coming on the show. But if you have that, just reserve your player by just DMing me. They're always open, and I'll contact you and talk about when we can schedule the show. Dan, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.